Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged and delighted to welcome a very, very senior and accomplished finance, fintech professional, a fellow IPOer, Sandhya Vasudevan from Bangalore, India. Sandhya, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Great to be here.
Thank you. Sandhya is an independent director. She's a board advisor and she's a consultant. She's the former managing director of Deutsche Bank. And as I just mentioned, she's a fellow member of the YPO. So Sandhya, what an amazing journey you've had. So today we're going to speak about banking and fintech. Over the years, as a senior banker, how have you seen banking change and evolve?
If you look at banking over the last three, four decades, I'll talk about three major changes that I've seen. One is on technology. If you look at the earlier technology was mainframes, then moved into a more distributed network. And today it's AI, ML, you're looking at robotics. But I think there's also the future of quantum computing. Mm. What this connectedness has done is globally, a lot of work has been shifted around the globe, and India has been a major beneficiary of the offshoring. Mm-hmm. Within India, I think the technology transformation has had a humongous impact. If I look at it, it started off with the India Stack, which is the Jandan account, the Aadhaar, and the mobile device. So for the international audience, it is an individual bank account without much frills. Mm-hmm. You have your individual identifier as a citizen of the country, and then you have the mobile number. Mm-hmm. But that kind of completely transformed with the way we did banking. Mm-hmm. We onboarded, I think, almost every citizen of India, at least one person within the family, which is transformational in and of itself. Mm. But I think it didn't stop there. We are one of the first countries to have the KYC as a utility at a country level. We have standardized reports across all your bank accounts, which is now available to everyone. Mm. But I think one of the other biggest transformation is on payments. Okay. India brought in UPI and Bheem, and it is truly revolutionary. Mm. And we were smart enough to bring in the cybersecurity element along with it as well. Mm-hmm. I think this led to the proliferation of fintech. So that's one stream. The second one was risk and regulatory.
Okay.
Now, across the globe, 2008 was a very seminal year with all the changes. Mm-hmm. And this has also meant that you had changes that were brought in internationally, but every country, depending on what it was going through, also brought in changes. And if you look at it on a daily basis, at least one or two regulations are getting rolled out in each country. Mm. So if you're an international bank, it's insane trying to stay on top of it. Mm-hmm. The third biggest one is the way with connectedness, technology, human behavior changes. Mm-hmm. The third biggest one is geopolitics. Mm-hmm. So which means your trade activity across the globe. All of that has had a shift in the way we do business. Mm-hmm. So I think I've called these three three major trends in banking, which have brought it to where we are today.
Amazing. And yet, you know, when I go back four decades when I started my career, it was going to Grindlay's Bank as an ITC employee, standing in a queue, taking out your checkbook or filling the slip to deposit cash. So then you see a decline in the brick and mortar business across the whole country?
I think yes and no. Let me stay with the banking sector first. I think most of us today don't go to a bank. Maybe 95% of your activity is done online. Maybe 5%, you sometimes go to see the branch manager because you want to get some documents signed at best. New banks have been established where there is no physical branch at all. Most large banks have cut down the number of branches, and many of them have partnered with, say, maybe even a retail chain to say, okay, can I have a little outlet in your physical brick and mortar environment? Yeah. So I think that has kind of brought about huge changes. This is also true on the e-commerce side. And especially with COVID, many of us have moved online, at least the middle class. But I don't think brick and mortar is going away. The small kirana shops are still very much there. So I think at least in the near term for India, it will be a hybrid.
It will be there. Wonderful. Wonderful.
But on the banking side, it's highly digitalized.
Well said. And yet, you know, when you were just telling me about the India stack and all the stuff that has been happening for financial inclusion, there are, of course, in a country as large as ours, there will always be multiple views. And I'm a great believer in what is happening in our country. But for our viewers and listeners, how is the digital revolution empowering financial inclusion?
I think it's a great question. I'll share a couple of stories so that it gets... almost every family has somebody with a bank account today. Especially when COVID hit us, many of us couldn't draw cash. So almost everyone who works for us got paid online, either through the wallet or through their directly into their bank accounts. What I found, what I still find is in the urban areas where vendors service us, the middle class population, which is a significant portion in India, most of them have wallets and many of us don't carry cash at all.
Correct.
In fact, I don't remember when I last went to the ATM. But I don't think we can ignore how it is getting played out in the villages because not all of them are digitally savvy. The younger generation is, some of the older ones are not, and they're still suspicious. They like to go to the branch and get the money.
Correct.
I was actually horrified during the COVID times when a couple of the people were staying at home with me. They said, "Nay, we need to go to the, you know, get somebody, a correspondent kind of person to transfer the money for us." I said, "I'll transfer it on the account."
Yeah.
Said, "No, no, no, we want to transfer it from our account." And I realized that they're still comfortable with the human intervention. What was even more scary to me is they asked the branch manager to withdraw the cash for them because they feel safer. So it's an interesting, but I think it's a transitioning phase for us. But digital literacy has enabled people, even at the bottom of the pyramid, to leverage what is available in the banking sector. They're getting funding through the mudra loans. They have access to credit in ways that wasn't there before. So I think it's happening. Is it enough? No. But it is definitely in the right direction.
Fascinating. And the next step that seems to be moving now is toward the digital currency or a digital rupee. And I've been associated with a company in San Francisco, which has been implementing the digital currency in several countries. What is your perspective on the digital rupee in India?
Let me start with two things. One is when India went into demonetization, at the end of it, cash to GDP was about 7.5%. Last October, it was around 14.5% of our GDP, which is about 28 trillion, which is a significant amount. So I was one of those believers who thought it would go down significantly, but it hasn't. I think from what I understand, a lot of it is in the unorganized sector. So the digital currency, I hope, will move us in the right direction, especially the small business guys. If they're able to move to that, it becomes easier. The cryptocurrency conversation is a slightly different one. Because the underlying value for it is not well understood, and it's also changing. It's a very dynamic space. And the debate between cryptocurrency and fiat currency is still out there. But I genuinely believe digital currency will make a huge difference for us as a country.
Well said. So I'm now going to move our conversation to a little bit about valuation of companies. And as a banker, and bankers are generally conservative, I'd love to get your perspective on who understands valuation better. Is it the stock market or is it the VCs?
I'm not sure, Ashutosh. I'll be very honest because I'm not sure I understand it. Very fundamental stuff. In the stock market, you have the primary, offering, which is the IPO, when people go to that, and then the secondary sales that tend to happen. And people who buy and trade in that can be either who look at the fundamentals of the company, or they are kind of just looking at are the numbers going up and down? We're just looking at the technicals. VCs, on the other hand, tend to be pre-IPO. They are looking at it in more in terms of, is it got to scale? Is it really, is the underlying value increasing? And you have a lot of specialists who are kind of supporting that side of the growth. So they have a lot of very good people who will take it in that direction. From that point of view, you have the specialists who drive the valuation or the capability around that. But I think the stock market is, it's at the vagaries of people's sentiment.
Very, very well said. But, you know, again, I was talking to some of the large family-owned business houses and, you know, several of them are YPO members. And they often ask me this question, you know, we have spent dozens and maybe 50, 100 years building assets, making profitable companies. And yet here come a group of individuals who suddenly say, we are valued at 10 times your value. And we're still making losses. I'd love to get your thoughts on something like this as a former banker.
Let me put it this way. Banks tend to be conservative, and we do go actually a lot more with the brick and mortar company and you want the underlying information. Having said that, a couple of things. Actually, if you look at the digital economy, it is in some ways very disruptive. So when they bring in a change, and if they are able to meet the needs of multiple stakeholders, the multi-stakeholder platform, as they call it, that the value is created for every stakeholder, they want to go fast and they want to hit it so that nobody else can follow them easily. So therefore, what happens is they need deep pockets and they're willing to kind of chase it and they become number one or they capture a significant portion of the market. Whereas I think traditional businesses focus more on the value creation. If you look at McDonald's, for example, it is it built its execution capability, its customer focus, and its quality over decades. You don't have the time today for that kind of decades of change. So, but having said that, I think there is value in both kinds of businesses. And depending on the temperament of the promoters, I think you go in that direction.
Well said. Well said. So let's move on and talk about your role as an independent director. You know, the laws in our country are so stringent that today the fiduciary responsibility of an independent director is the same as that of an executive director.
Yes.
I'd like to get an understanding from you on what do you look for before you accept a board position?
I've been on board since 82, when I was in college. At that time, probably it's more family friends who said, okay, can I get onto a board kind of thing, which is how we landed up there. But I think over the years, one of the fundamental things that I realized is you need to understand where do you come from? What do you stand? Where do you stand on some of those spaces? And what's your personal risk appetite and your value system? So if you have clear understanding of that as the base, then I tend to look at two things. One is, what kind of business is it? And what kind of people or promoters are there? And are those two spaces comfortable for me? So if I were to take, if I take businesses, now we were talking about the cash economy. If pure play cash economy, would I want to go into that vis-a-vis if I had a digital economy kind of an opportunity? My personal preference would be a digital economy opportunity because I want to be part of the future change, even though there is a lot of runway for the cash. So my personal preference would be there. But there's also the other one, if you're looking at defense sector or the retail sector, I mean, real estate sector, the environment, putting it euphemistically, the environment needs to get managed. That doesn't align with my risk appetite.
Well said.
I'm uncomfortable with that. And what kind of people are they? I think those are the factors. And what kind of value systems do they come from? They may be very nice people, but if they're very comfortable managing the environment, that would not be the organization I would go into.
Well said. And what is the level of transparency that you seek in an Indian boardroom?
There are three kinds of board activity, if I were to call it that. Mm-hmm. One is they just need the bare minimum of what the regulators ask you to do, the compliance requirements. Mm-hmm. That's a tick box exercise. Yeah, you know, you say I'm compliant with ABCD. Mm-hmm. That's okay for a very small subsidiary of a large enterprise if you know the activities are pretty minimal. Mm-hmm. The other side is where the strategy is discussed. The operational updates are solid. There is, if needed, board members are asked to go spend time with the businesses. Mm. And then they also review the statutory activity. My personal preference is for that kind of a board, because otherwise you go there for 4 hours, are you really creating value for them? Yeah, I mean, you may be bringing some value because you're attending stuff. So I would look for that. Today's laws make it very, you do need to meet certain standards. And if it's a decent board, you have that. Mm. But the differentiator is, how actively are you asked to be involved with the business side?
Correct. And another question that has often been asked is that, what are some of the precautions an independent director should take before they sign up? Yeah. Other than, of course, their due diligence, do I know the promoter and do I like the business?
Yeah, I would say, you know, as you rightly said, it's the due diligence. But what I would check in the due diligence are a couple of things. Mm-hmm. I would scrutinize the audit reports for the last few years.
Okay.
I could actually look at any regulatory reports which may be there if it's a regulated entity. Mm-hmm. I'd also check where they stand against the peer group and where they're heading. I also will check the social media. Mm-hmm. For the key personnel, because what is the lifestyle? And as you know, in the banking sector, you had people who had lifestyles which were kind of quite logical, and that actually led to a lot of problems for many organizations.
Yeah.
So it is worthwhile checking if you have very flamboyant people who should not be having that kind of lifestyle, then you should just check where is that coming from.
Right.
You know, some people may be comfortable in their own, you know, thing, not just because of the entity. Then you need to do your due diligence from there. Apart from the usual, you know, other things of what kind of industry, etc.
Yeah, you know, this is such an amazing tip, and I never thought of this, but you're so right. I mean, you know, you must check the social media profiles for key people, because a lot of people say a lot of things on social media.
Yeah.
Without realizing that what they've said was going to stay there forever. So.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So moving on now, Sandhya. And this question is for the many, many young people who will listen to our conversation. What are three lessons that you would like our viewers and listeners to take away from our conversation?
I'll share three lessons from my career journey. When I joined the TBS, I did not necessarily come from any business background. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned was, don't be afraid to ask stupid questions, because there are no stupid questions. Mm-hmm. We learn from books, learn from magazines, go talk to people. And even if you're people from across the globe, reach out and talk to them. Because I started working in the mid-80s.
Right.
In the software side, there wasn't that much out here in India. You had a few people, but not many.
Yeah.
I wrote to people across the globe to say, what can I do to build it? Mm. And I was so surprised to get answers for many of the things, including on leasing. So learn from people. Don't be afraid to make mistakes on that one. Mm. The second piece was when I was with AXA and Thomson Reuters, how do you engage with the global stakeholders, the relationships? How do you... You need to understand the rules of engagement in any environment you get into. You know, I use that example of Thomson Reuters. It was an international space. Mm-hmm. Today, if I want to get into, let's say, rural India, I need to understand how that's going to work and how do I blend into being a trusted partner there. So I think the stakeholder engagement and becoming a trusted partner, that was the second piece. Mm-hmm. The third one, which I think has evolved in the last 8-10 years, and I think Deutsche was good at it. For risk management, we had something called MaRisk. Mm-hmm. That is basically each of us will challenge what you're seeing. It's constantly kicking the tires to say, so that you find the risk and you can deal with it. Mm-hmm. But what I translate it as, do you speak your truth? At the end of the day, are you true to yourself? Are you calling out what makes sense? Because I've seen that when we don't do that, both individually and as an organization, that's when you have problems. So are you consistent within your internal self and what you actually do?
Amazing. And great points, all three of them. So Sandhya, I've got time for two or three more questions. I'm going to move to a segment that I call personal questions because our viewers and listeners love to get to know my guests a little better. Let me start by asking you, given the amazing journey you've had, and you said, you know, you joined a board in 1982. So obviously you've seen a lot of life. From where you are today, as you look back and as you look ahead, what does success mean to Sandhya?
Being in harmony with myself.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think externally you can say, have you headed an organization? Are you X, Y, Z, whatever it is. But the reality is, at a certain point, are you completely in harmony with yourself? That's what's really going to be the yardstick by which you can live it.
Correct.
So I just keep it at that. So you've got to figure out whether that when you're saying you're in harmony with yourself, whether it can be in all dimensions of your life, whether it's financial, your career, your mental, emotional, physical, all of it, because you are at the end of the day a composite being. And unless you have that balance, you can't really be a complete person.
Wonderful. My next question is, who or what inspires you?
I think what really inspires me is doing something bigger than myself.
Okay.
It sounds a bit silly, but I'll give you an example. Last year, I'd gone for a lunch, you know, typical industry lunch, and we had some government officials and they were asking for ideas. And I was shutting my mouth off because I didn't want to really talk about what we were doing in the company. Result was a couple of days later, they said, do you want to write a white paper on the ideas that you sent? I won't go into the details of what the idea was, but over about 6 weeks, I've gotten another industry expert and we kind of threw up that document. And the government actually did sign off the funding for that. And it was, what it made me feel was, we don't realize that we have an impact which is bigger than ourselves, and therefore we should, I'd like to push more than anything else if I can find those spaces.
Fantastic. And now my last question to you, and this is a question on failure. I actually have a book on failure because I've often said parents in India or South Asia or even Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. We're always taught first in class, head of the line, etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. Yet we fail, we learn, and we keep moving on. So my question to you, Sandhya, is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
I'd say if I were to look at the thematic space, I'm an extrovert. So I'm, you know, most people think I'm very, very comfortable with people. But having been a single child, my understanding of human nature was not that much. Okay. And your pursuits as a child was, you played with a lot of children, but you kind of, you were also a loner and you read a lot. That meant that when you came into the workplace, quite often you didn't understand human behavior. And over the years, I've learned when I am really self-aware and I'm equally aware of the other human being with whom I'm engaging, that's when, call it magic happens. When I'm not as conscious or self-aware and I'm equally not conscious of what the other person is, that's when things fail. And it's a learning process constantly because you change as well as the people you engage with change. And for me, that's a lifelong space of learning. There have been times which has where that's been a major setback. There have been times because you did it right, you were very successful. So some of these things, your success and failure can kind of tie up with one of the, for me, this is the thematic area where it's been a major learning.
Well said. Sandhya, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your amazing perspectives on banking, finance, fintech. Thank you for talking to me about the digital things that are happening in our country and how it's empowering so many millions of people. Thank you for also sharing your thoughts on an independent director and what you look for before you consider joining. And finally, thank you for sharing with me some of your own lessons. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.